Alright? Okay, so how are you guys doing? Good? Okay. So, this lecture I will cover mostly a brief recap of the last class so that you have kind of get a game, know to all the players, and then we'll discuss about how cellular signaling, especially cell cycle related signaling, is modulated in cancer, and then how cell cycle and apoptosis are linked together, and what are the differences, key differences between cancer and normal, and some example about the cell cycle protein in during tumor genesis, and what is the role of reactive oxygen species in cell cycle. So you guys already have gone through. So we have four phases of cell cycle. So G1 phase. In this phase, you have preparation for the synthesis phase. So this phase requires around 7 to 8 hours. And once this phase is completed, there is DNA replication in S phase. And if that is completed, that will go to the again preparation phase for cell division, and then finally undergo cytokinesis. So G1 phase is very important, because once cells divide, they have two options. Either they can go to quiescent state, G0 state, or they immediately enter to active cell cycle state. How cells continue to proliferate or continue to be in cell cycle depend upon the mitogenic growth factor. So in the availability of growth factor, that will ultimately lead to the immediate entry into the cell cycle phase. So, and this phase have certain point that you need addition of growth factor. So the time that you need growth factor presence is called restriction point. So once you cross the restriction point, you no longer require growth factor to enter the rest of the phase of cell cycle. And we discussed that you have various checkpoint. So in G1 checkpoint, you have if there is a damage to the DNA, if there are immediate restrictions, cell will not enter to synthesis phase unless the DNA damage is repaired at this stage. Similarly, you have checkpoint in the synthesis phase. So when they have during replication due to endogenous or any other exogenous stress, if there is damage to the DNA molecule, this cycle will halt here, and unless the DNA synthesized DNA is repaired. And here again you have a checkpoint in G2 that basically check whether the synthesized DNA is already in correct format and there is no incorporation or misincorporation of any nucleotide. And that once this is completed, then it goes to mitosis phase. So in this phase again, make sure that there is no chromosome aberration or there is no other complication that will pass on to the next daughter cells. So that's why this is very these checkpoints are very important to maintain the genomic integrity and cell cycle. So we have various players in cell cycle, and the key players are cyclins, and you have cyclin dependent kinases. So these are the two players. In cyclins, you have cyclin D, cyclin E, and cyclin A and B, and these basically work in association with CDK. So once they associate and form a complex, that basically participate in cell cycle procedure. And the level of, and because these cyclins, they are required in different phases of cell cycle, their level also oscillate different up and down different phases of cell cycle. So like for example, you have cyclin B that mostly required in M phase, and then again it comes back to M phase. Cyclin D is mostly required to cross cell to restriction point, so you require cyclin D level until you cross the restriction point, after that you no longer require. So basically again here you have early G1 to late G1, you have cyclin D1, and then it goes down and comes back again. Similarly, you have cyclin E require late G1 and S phase. So like that, there is a very well programmed signaling that control the level of this protein at different phases of cell cycle. And that can happen due to phosphorylation and the degradation of these proteins when they not required, stoppage of synthesis, that means if you no longer require, synthesis of these cyclins will be stopped. So in this way, there is always a regulation of and check and balances of cell cycle. So as we mentioned before, that cyclins, they require a lot of factors, and these factors are cyclin-dependent kinases. So for early event that basically is immediately required for cells to enter to cell cycle phase, it requires mitogenic signaling, and that activated CDK4 and CDK and cyclin D, they form complex, and that helps cells to cross restriction point. And once cells cross restriction point, this complex is no longer required, and then you have another complex formation, CDK2 and cyclin E complex formation, that again goes to into the late G1 phase and early S phase. And in S phase, you have cyclin CDK2 Na, and that ultimately is required to complete S phase. And then again, you have cyclin B and CDC2. So in this way, you have all these cyclins, and cyclin-dependent kinases, they play a very important role in forming complexes and then regulating cell cycle progression. So the function of these complexes are also regulated by cyclin-dependent kinase inhibitors. So let's say there is a high level of these cyclins, there is a high level of CDKs. There is always check and balances that you have inhibitors that can block if there is a need for cells to stop a certain phase of cell cycle. And these inhibitors are ink family protein, which are P15, P16, and P19, and these bind with the cyclin D associating complexes and inhibit. So they inhibit the most initiating event, that is this ink family of CDKIs, they inhibit cells to not to proceed after the restriction point. So in that means these are, you can say, that limiting event that affect the function of cyclin D and CDK4 and CDK6 complexes. And so once you have this phase class, then you have another group of inhibitors called CYP and KIP family of protein. And these CYP and KIP, they mostly inhibit the rest of the phases of cell cycle. And they can be also promoting cyclin D CDK4 association, but they are required for inhibition of other complexes. So here you have all these in the family of inhibitors, P16, P15, 18, and 19, they inhibit cyclin D and CDK4-6 function. So in that way, you ultimately, cells will stop as G1 will not enter the cell cycle phase. Whereas CYP and KIP, they inhibit the rest of the cyclin and CDK complexes that are required for other phases of cell cycle. Interestingly, CYP and KIP, they have dual function. They promote cyclin D CDK4-6 complex formation, whereas they inhibit other cyclin complexes. So in that way, CYP and KIP function as a kind of, you can say, promoting to cyclin D and CDK complexes, whereas other cell cycle fields will be inhibited. So normally, during early phase, G1 phase, you have a high level of CYP and KIP, and these proteins ultimately will inhibit the later phases of cell cycle. So that means they will keep if any cell cycle that and any protein complex cyclins and CDK complexes that are active in later phases of cell cycle will be inhibited, and if there is a mitogenic signal, and that will allow synthesis of cyclin D and CDK4 and 6. And then this complex also requires CYP and KIP, and once this complex becomes active, this will synthesize cyclin and CDK2 complex formation. So once you have this complex formation, they again become active, but because you have a lot of CYP and KIP, these complexes are still inhibited. So that means unless cells cross the restriction point, most of the CYP and KIP, they are sufficient amount to inhibit complex CDK and cyclin complexes that is required for synthesis, GU2 and M4A. So in that way you can say that early event, they are not playing much role in terms of activating cyclin E-CDK complexes, whereas in the early event they are kind of promoting CDK 4, 6 and cyclin D complexes. So once you have a growth factor addition, you have a high level of activity of cyclin D and CDK 4, 6 complexes that will ultimately lead to again synthesis of cyclin D, and then you have a high level of cyclin D and CDK 4 complexes that sequester most of the CYP and KIP. So once most of the CYP and KIP is basically sequestered by these complexes, then you have synthesis of this functional activity of these complexes, and that leads to the later failure of cell cycle. So in the beginning you have CDK 4, CDK 6 complexes that are inhibited by in the family protein, and CYP and KIP inhibiting later phases of cell cycle complexes in response to mitogenic signaling. You have a high level of cyclin D production that will ultimately displace INC family protein and bind with CDK4-6 complexes, and then ultimately you have more cyclin D CDK4-6 complexes that will dissociate CYP and KIP from the cyclin CDK2 complex, or they can actually synthesize new, they can bind the free CYP and KIP and then become more active. So ultimately you have a majority of CYP and KIP are sequestered by cyclin D and 4-6 complexes, and ultimately these cyclin E and CDK2 complexes are active to initiate the, you have a question?
Yeah. So it's ultimately just a mitogenic signal that will cause the cyclin D to disrupt the inhibition of CDK4-6.
So what happened, you mean CDK4 and 6 displaces CYP and KIP from here? That's your question?
The original, when INC4 is bound to CDK4-6, mm-hmm. mm-hmm. how does cyclin D just displace?
So what happens is like when you have high level of cyclin D, so it's all about affinity. So when you have more level of cyclin D, basically they kind of displace, or either they degraded or they displace. So it's like a majority counts. So once they have majority of cyclin D and CDK4-6 complexes, they basically either displace INC family protein or they basically somehow leads to degradation of INC4, and then they can form the complex. So once you have the INC family protein, they have been deactivated or degraded. Now you have a cyclin D and 4-6 complexes, they become active with the help of CYP and KIP, and that ultimately leads to activation of cyclin E and CDK. So once you basically know that different phases of cyclin and CDK complexes, how they play role. So very early zero phase, when cells, once cells become two, immediately cells have to make decision whether they want to go to quiescent or they want to go to intercell cycle. And that determined by the presence of growth factor. If there's a high level of growth factor, that will allow these daughter cells to immediately enter to cell cycle phase. And once they enter cell cycle phase, this requires another group of protein like pocket protein and ETF protein. So here normally this is kind of gene expression. You can say now they go to the nuclear and basically regulate the gene expression. So here mostly in undividing cells, E2F bind to DNA molecule, and pocket protein, that's a tumor suppressor protein, bind with E2F and also recruit other active co-suppressor and ultimately suppress the function of E2F. So now, even though E2F bound, is bound to DNA, but it cannot do transcriptional activity. So in that way, very early time, you have very little activation of ETF. Once there is a mutagenic growth factor, as you can see, there is an increase in cyclin D synthesis and CDK4/6 complexes. Now these complexes, they become active. And you remember, pocket protein is already in a hypophosphorylated state. The phosphorylated pocket protein is still in hypophosphorylated phase, and that allows, you can say, desequestration of HDAC and the co-suppression. Now E2F have some activity, and that leads to expression of cyclin-related protein, for example, cyclin E. So now one cyclin is synthesized, and this cyclin then bind with the CDK2 and become active. And this complex then further phosphorylate pocket protein, and by doing that, pocket protein slowly, so there are around 14 phosphorylation sites in pocket protein. And cyclin E CDK2 complexes, they are mostly responsible for making these pocket protein hyperphosphorylated state. So out of 14 phosphorylation sites, 10 or 12 of the phosphorylation sites already slowly will be phosphorylated by this complex. Once this is phosphorylated in hyper state, this basically lose association with E2F. Now E2F is very highly functional, and this can lead to increased synthesis of various protein that is important for cell cycle, like for example cyclin E and E2F, another protein that is required at various stages of cell cycle. So now, in late G1 phase and then in S phase, this process continue, and then ultimately you have upregulation of dissociation of pocket protein, and this E2F complex, they also synthesize E2F4 and 5. These are repressors, so they also affect E2F function, and this ultimately translocate to cytoplasmic compartment and bind with other E2F, and then function is suppressor of this E2F1-3. So once this is become functional, this leads to again some synthesis cyclin E, and ultimately later time point E2F itself is phosphorylated by the cyclin A and CDK2 complex. And once this is phosphorylated, this also lose association from the DNA, and ultimately you have a dissociation and goes to cytosolic compartment, and then pocket protein is also dephosphorylated, and then everything comes back to the in the beginning that you had. So this kind of yes.
You say if E2F4 and 5 are suppressors.
So what happens is basically once you have pocket protein lose interaction with E2F, so there are different kind of E2F, right? So in E2F they have E2F1 to 3, they are activators of gene expression. But whether 4 and 5, they are inhibitors. So basically, they inhibit the transcriptional activity. So once you have this, because sometimes they heteroalgomerize. So if they heteroalgomerize with other protein, that will lead to inhibition of E2F function. And ultimately, you have E2F also phosphorylated, and then they lose interaction with the DNA molecule. Right? So this process also requires amplification of various events. So here you have, let's say, once E2F is functionally active, this will synthesize E2F itself. This will also synthesize CDK2 cyclin E complexes. This also leads to synthesis of cyclin D CDK4 complexes. So ultimately, these all events, and at the same time, this will be P227, and all the CYP and CYP will be degraded. So ultimately, combination of all these events will lead to complete cell cycle phase. And then once this process is completed, they go back to the original conformation. Okay, so now we know what are the signaling, what are the different cyclins, what are the different cyclin-dependent kinases, and what are the inhibitors, how they basically are played by pocket protein and ETF. So the other regulator that basically can affect cell cycle phase, for example, TGF-beta. So in cancer cells, let's say normal cells, you have high, let's say TGF-beta is very active, or you can say non-dividing cells, if TGF-beta is very active, this will lead to the stronger action on family protein. So once you have TGF-beta very functional, this will lead to synthesis of interfamily protein that will block cyclin D and CDK4 complexes. So in that way, cells will not cross to restriction point. Whereas, in addition to inhibiting cyclin D, CDK4-6 complexes, TGF-beta also, you can say, activate P21 and P27, I mean CYP and KIP. And then, in that case, CYP and KIP will also inhibit the rest of the phases of cell cycle. So TGF-beta directly, you can say, very strongly affect modulate that cells will not cross to restriction point. At the same time, this also affect other cyclins and CDK complexes, so that cells will not continue in cell cycle phase. Whereas, when in cancer cells, you have mitogenic signaling dominant, if they become dominant, they will ultimately lead to a different kind of signaling through PI3K/AKT pathway that will block P21 and CYP and KIP function. So now once this is blocked, these cells can continue, any cells that cross to cyclin D or cancer restriction point can continue this process. So in that way, there is balance between TGF-beta and mitogenic signaling in tumor cells. So you can see if they have more mitogenic signaling, that will ultimately domination of this event as compared to the suppressory event. So in addition to, if cancer cells want to dominate, they basically want to produce the things that they require for them. For example, they want a high level of CDK2 and cyclin complex formation. They need a high level of cyclin D1 and CDK4 complexes. So once you have a mitogenic signal in tumor cells that will ultimately lead to high level of these complex formation, cyclin D, CDK4, and cyclin E and CDK2 complex formation, and at the same time they also produce high level of E2F. So in that way, they're making more complex. So that means you have more E2F getting protein available that will bind and become more active. So whatever protein are degraded, that will be replaced, and that leads to also amplification of cyclin E and CDK2 complexes, and that ultimately will fall. So by doing that, they amplify the cell cycle signaling by producing higher level of cyclin E CDK2 complexes to keep pocket protein in hyperphosphorylated state and continue the cell cycle. At the same time, they also participate in degradation of these CYP and KIP. So here in this case, you have a cyclin E-CDK2 complexes that will lead to, you can say, if you have a high level of T20 CYP and KIP, that will bind with this complex and inhibit later phases of cell cycle after G1. But when you have high activation of these complexes, they can be actually phosphorylated, CYP and KIP can be phosphorylated by these complexes, CDK and cyclin complexes. And then once these proteins are phosphorylated, they are marked for degradation. So that means these proteins, once phosphorylated, they will be degraded. They will translocate out from nucleus to the cytoplasmic compartment, and there they undergo degradation and ubiquitination. So in that way, you can say that they perform dual function. They at the same time, they produce high level of cyclin E-CDK complexes. At the same time, they also degrade CYP and KIP protein that is required for inhibition of cell cycle. Yes?
What's phosphorylating KIP here?
So these complexes, these cyclin and CYP and KIP as well.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so, so it's all about, you can say, post-translational effects protein-protein interaction. and that ultimately regulate different phases of cell cycle. So they, at the same time they want to produce more cyclin CDK complexes, at the same time they also want to phosphorylate other protein so that they can remove the inhibitory effect and continue to keep continuing proliferating. So what happened? Overall, there is a lot of changes. Yes?
Yeah, sorry, two slides ago.
Okay.
Here, does it mean when it goes into the positive feedback loop, does it mean it doesn't need the CDK4 anymore?
You mean this one?
When it reaches the positive feedback loop, does it still need the CDK4?
No, so there are two things. Once the cells already cross restriction point, they no longer require cyclin D CDK4C complex. But they still require other cyclin and CDK complexes so that they can continue S, G2, and M phase. Right? So now we know that pocket protein are very important, very regulatory, very strong inhibitory protein that affects cell cycle. So majority of cancer cells, you have pocket protein either mutated or deleted. So when you don't have, you can say, pocket protein, that means there is no control. Once they have mitogenic signal, they immediately start entering in cell cycle. So that means if you don't have TGF-beta signaling, if you don't have a pocket protein, cells will continue to divide and continue to proliferate. At the same time, they also have overexpressed cyclin D. So once you have cyclin D1, because cyclin D1 is very important, because this basically decides whether cells really, you can say, rate limiting event, that basically once you have a higher level of cyclin D, it will promote these cells to enter into active cell cycle phase. And of course, the CDK4, the CDK4 and CDK are also overexpressed. And other protein like the inhibitors, they also either deleted or downregulated. So, if you look at different prostate, different types of cancer, so you can say in majority of cancer you have some or other alteration. So, like for example, in glioblastoma, alteration means it can be upregulated, it can be downregulated. So you have a glioblastoma, you have cyclin, RB, P16, 27, CDK4 and 6. So that means 80% of basically they have one or other change. So in that way, let's say for example, you have high level of cyclin D. What will happen? Cells will promote active cell cycle. And if you have low level of CYP and KIP, that will also promote cells to enter cell cycle. So like that, in majority of, you can say, tumor types, you have somewhere between, I mean, there are some that you have very low, but majority you have a high level of one or combination of multiple mutation or alteration that ultimately affect cell cycle progression. So now we know that cyclin D is very important rate-limiting protein that is important for cells to enter into cell cycle. So this can be upregulated various signaling, for example, when there is a growth factor, when there is high-tune signaling, there is wind signaling, and there also other signaling that ultimately leads to upregulation of cyclin D. And these does not mean that these events happen in every cell cycle, every cell type. It depends upon cell type. Any kind of signaling can dominate and induce high level of cyclin D, and that will lead to cells to enter into active cell cycle. So here again you have a multiple signaling pathway that can lead to upregulation of cyclin D. For example, RANK receptor, then all the basically pathways that can ultimately lead to upregulation of a different kind of cyclase, and that will lead to cross cells to restriction point. Okay, what are the other factors that basically regulate cyclin level? So, in addition to that we discussed, the other transcription factors that play important role. So in this case, once there is a mitogenic activation, you have RAS pathway become active. These have multiple ways this can regulate cells to enter into cell cycle. So number one, RAS activate formation of this FAS and JUN complex that will lead to, so there's a promoter of cyclin D. So this is cyclin D1 promoter site. And this heteroprotein complex, they bind at promoter site and FAS and JUN, and that leads to upregulation of cyclin D. And this cyclin D1 then ultimately participate in cell cycle, kinetic CDK 4 and 6, and basically help cells to cross the restriction point. This can also lead to another complex, TCF and beta-catenin pathway. So once beta-catenin become active, this will initiate TCF and beta-catenin complex formation, and that will also lead to cyclin D1 upregulation. In addition, RAS can also activate PI3K kinase signaling that leads to AKT activation, which is then inhibit GSK. So once GSK is inhibited, this will phosphorylate, let's say for example GSK phosphorylate beta-catenin. So you have beta-catenin that is phosphorylated by GSK and will be degraded. Now once you have mitogenic signal and RAS is become active, RAS can actually block GSK function. So once GSK function is blocked, beta-catenin no longer able to upregulate cyclin D level. So one side RAS signaling inducing upregulation of cyclin D1, on the other side inhibiting function of the inhibitors. So now here GSK is inhibitor. So basically they inhibiting GSK function, and that will lead to again high level of cyclin D activation. This can also directly upregulate cyclin D through other pathway, even though this is a weaker pathway, but this can also lead to activation of cyclin D1. So by doing that, you have a high level of cyclin D1 by activation of RAS pathway, and once you have high level of cyclin D1, that will participate in CDK4-6 complex formation, and cells will cross restriction point. When there is no need for the cyclin D, that will be basically will be phosphorylated and you will be ketonated and then finally degraded. So you can say once cells cross restriction point, you no longer need this protein, and this protein then will be degraded by phosphorylation and ubiquitination. So in this way, cells, especially cancer cells, they have modulated the system in such a way so that they can continue to proliferate by actively involving in cell cycle. Okay.
Question on the last slide. So the RAS pathway both activates but also degrades cyclin D1?
So RAS pathway basically, in this case, let's say for example you have activation of cyclin D1, right? But this pathway is very weak. Yeah, so generally most of the time you have basically this pathway that ultimately leads to weaker pathway is not dominant. But most dominant pathway is this basically activation of cyclin D1, but inhibition of GSK pathway. So in this one, you also have a regulation of cyclin D level or other complexes. Mostly you can say that MYC is also highly upregulated in majority of tumor cells. So that means MYC play very important role in maintaining continued cell proliferation. So MYC function with other protein like MAX, and they form heterodimer. So this can have a multiple role again here. So when there is a MYC and MAX heterodimer formation, this will activate cyclin D2 synthesis. That means there is a more cyclin D and CDK4-6 complex formation, and that will allow, you can say, inhibition of basically some function of RB, as we mentioned that in the beginning, cyclin D-CDK4 cis complexes phosphorylate pocket protein at very low level. So cyclin D-4 cis complex also very in the beginning reduced function of RB by hypophosphorylating. So in this way, MYC and MAS complex, they activate cyclin D and CDK4 protein, and these two then form complex and then basically block pocket protein function. On the other side, MYC and MAS, they also upregulate CKS and Cl1 protein. So these protein then inhibit CYP and KIP family protein. So one side they are activating the protein that is important for cells to cross restriction point, and other side they are inhibiting CYP and KIP family protein. So once you have a high upregulation of Cl1 and CKS1, these ultimately will inhibit CYP and KIP. In addition, at late G1 phase, MYC and MAS, they also upregulate E2F, different E2F. These are all the active E2F that bind with the DNA and induce various protein that is important for cell cycle. So you can see that these ultimately will lead to synthesis of protein that is important for one cell's cross restriction point, and they will continue to enter into cell cycle. So, in addition, you also have like a MYC and with other complex formation, and these complex, so MYC in association with MYX have multiple cell cycle promoting activities. It also bind with the MYG1 protein and then inhibit INK family protein and also inhibit CYP and KIP. So in this way, you have a MYC that playing very important role by promoting cyclin D4-6 complexes, by promoting E2F activation, and that and at the same time the inhibiting CYP and KIP and INK family protein. So in this way, totally you can say that they are kind of, you can say, master regulator of all these cell cycle kind of regulating, promoting cyclin D and CDK4 complexes, promoting amplification pathway. Remember, if you have more E2F, these ultimately will amplify the event, and you have more cyclin E CDK2 complexes. So more you have E2F, more you have cyclin D, that will allow cells to cross the restriction point, and then cells continue to complete cell cycle. Okay, so in addition to, they also have other signaling. So you can say, for example, in if the estrogen receptor that basically bind with the sequestered MYC protein in the cytosolic compartment, and when they get, you have estrogen, when there is upregulation of estrogen, either exogenous addition of estrogen, estrogen will bind with the receptor, and that allows a different conformation and change, and that this complex then move to the nucleus and then bind with the, you can say, MAX allows MYC and MAX binding that ultimately will lead to promote cells cross restriction point. So in this way, you can say MYC have multiple role that ultimately will lead to promote cell cycle phases both at early G1 and also at late G1. MYC and MAX complex, they are also important for inhibiting tissue differentiation. So normally when cells are not dividing, they are in differentiation state, that have different complex formation. And once MYC and MAX become active, they induce ID2 protein. And this ID2 then basically bind, displace E12, and then ultimately leads to this complex MYOD and ID2 formation. In that way, the differentiation will stop. So that means cells can inter-cell cycle even, and they will not differentiate. So these pathways basically also important to depending upon cell type to cell type, these can actually start differentiation and make cells to enter into active cell cycle. Okay, so now this is you can say all things coming together here now. Okay, so now you have a different protein that play important role. So like for example, if you have a here in this case, so red means this favor cell cycle and blue means inhibit cell cycle and gray means the real function is not known. This can be inhibiting or inducing, not clearly defined. So once there is a mitogenic signaling that will activate RAS pathway that will ultimately lead to cyclin D1 or you can say cyclin's activation. And similarly, PI3 kinase can also immediately activate AKT and PKB complex function and that will lead to NF-κB activation and you have cyclin D upregulation. Wnt signaling that can actually, so here basically beta catenin pathway can induce cyclin D formation and APC can block this and then you have Wnt signaling that block APC function and then you have cyclin D upregulation. So like this you have make another different pathway, so they are not only one single pathway or not one single protein that is important for cells to enter into cell cycle. This can be depend upon cell type, this depend upon let's say mitogenic signal, and this also depend upon state of cells. Even same cells can have different signaling depending upon what are the mitogenic signal and what kind of resources they have at the time. So once you have cyclin B upregulation, so these are the early time point you are happening, and then you have cyclin D and CDK4/6 complex formation. And now here you have all the signaling that ultimate, so now TGF-beta protein play important role. So now TGF-beta, we discussed, remember we discussed that TGF-beta become active and inhibit INC and CYP and KIP family protein. So now you have TGF-beta activated and then basically they block through INC family protein, they block cyclin D CDK4/6 complexes. At the same time they can also block CYP and KIP. So in this way, once this path, even though you have high level of cyclin D and other CDK4/6 complexes, but if you have a dominant TGF-beta signaling, that means TGF-beta is very strong at this stage, cells will not cross to restriction point. So that means it all depends upon cell type to cell type. If normal cells, they have a lot of check and balances, this pathway will be more dominant. In tumorigenic cells, where you have high level of mitogenic signal, this pathway will dominate. So once you have this pathway dominate, that will overcome TGF-beta signaling and that ultimately leads to basically phosphorylation of RB protein. So now RB protein is phosphorylated, so RB protein function is also inhibited and activated by different other pathways. So here you have a different protein that can modulate RB function, because once you inhibit RB function, that will ultimately lead to ETF activation. So like this, you have a different other protein that is just play important role. So there, it's very hard to pinpoint exactly not only the cyclins and CDK2 and CDK4/6 complexes, but the other protein play a role in regulating cells to enter into cell cycle. So, in addition to playing a role in cell cycle, E2F, they also participate in regulating apoptotic cell death. So, once, because it has been reported that overexpression of E2F induces apoptosis, that also E2F block the RB function, and then this P53 dependent and independent apoptosis, and P53 dependent apoptosis can be through upregulation of P53 and also can be upregulation of P53 independent function that also have multiple role to regulate apoptosis. So here in this case, like you have a P53 function is inhibited by a protein called MDM2. So if you have high level of MDM2, P53 is mostly in inactive state. Once you have stress signal, that will activate P53. At the same time, it will activate ARF. Once ARF is activated, this will block MDM2 and that will lead to activation of P53. So once P53 is activated, this will lead to induction of P21. That can lead to growth arrest. This can also lead to upregulation of various other protein like BAX, APOP1, PUMA, and other death receptor protein, and that will lead to cell death formation. Once you have mitogenic signal and MYC activation or RAS signaling, that will lead to high upregulation of cyclins and CDK complexes formation. That will phosphorylate RB protein. Once RB protein is phosphorylated, the restriction will be removed and ETF become active. And once ETF become active, this will lead to various protein important for cell cycle and then your cell cycle progresses. ETF can also lead to upregulation of various other protein that is important for apoptosis, like P73, APOP1 and BHC only protein, caspases, that will lead to cell death. So if you look at ETF and P53 pathway, as you can see how they are correlated. So normally you have P53 function is inhibited by MDM2 and MDM2 is inhibited by ARF, and E2F induces ARF. DNA damage also induces ATM activation, and that ultimately leads to inhibition of MDM2. And once you have MDM2 function is deactivated, you have functional P53. And this functional P53 then leads to apoptosis. Either direct interaction with them, protein like BAX and BAX, or through indirect interaction, as you can say, activation of different protein like BAX and other protein that will ultimately lead to apoptosis. So P53 can have transcription independent function to induce cell death. Like this thing can activate PSC-only protein, this can activate BAX, this can also activate APOP1. So these are, you can say, transcription dependent activity in regulating apoptosis. This can also have a transcriptional independent, like directly interact with the BAX. And once you have APOP1 and cytochrome C interact, you have caspase activation and apoptosis death. So what is difference between, the key difference between cancer and normal cells? So let's say, for example, there is mitogenic signals, and you have normal cells, you have cancer cells. Which cells will immediately enter into cell cycle? So normal cells, they have various resources that will kind of allow them to kind of stop basically cell cycle progression. So for example, in this case, these are normal cells. So once there is activation of mitogenic signaling, that means you have a growth factor addition. So if you have just by chance addition of growth factor, or just single pulse, just few minutes or few hours, you have activation of this signaling. That will lead to active P53 signaling, and that will stop cell proliferation. So that means, if there is a by chance upregulation of mitogenic signal, normal cells will not enter cell cycle. This requires continuous, or you can say, two or three times upregulation of various signaling that will ultimately deactivate P53 function. So you can say that in normal cells, you need consistent involvement of growth factor signaling that will ultimately overcome inhibitory cell cycle anti-proliferating genes, and that will ultimately lead to cells to enter into cell cycle. Okay. But so you can say that if you have a consistent upregulation of mitogenic signaling, then only normal cells will enter into cell division. Whereas if you have just say, for example, accidental signaling, or you can say sporadic signaling, this will ultimately lead to inhibition of cell cycle. So cells will not enter into active cell cycle phase. But in case of cancer cells, they have majority of cancer cells, they have p53 mutation. So if there is by chance, as you can say, there is even sporadic mitogenic signaling, that will activate cell cycle phase. So in that case, let's say, for example, there is only very low amount of mitogenic signaling, some cells will enter into cell cycle. And once these cells enter into cell cycle, that will lead to cell proliferation. So that is why normal cells, they have a very robust, you can say, anti-proliferative signaling that basically stops cells to enter into cell cycle. Whereas in cancer cells, they are very prone, or they are, you can say, predisposed to enter cell cycle, because they have various, I'm just giving example of the protein also affected. So in that case, basically, here in this case, I took p53 example. For example, in PRB, the other protein also defective here. So moment you get mitogenic signaling, you have activation of cell cycle in cancer cells, but not in normal cells. Because normal cells, you have p53 active, you have RB functional. So all these proteins, they basically, you can say, consider as checkpoint. Basically will not allow cells to enter into cell cycle. Whereas cancer cells, you don't have that signaling that can stop cell cycle just because there is, you can say, sporadic release of mitogenic growth factor. So how, just kind of take example of lung tumor. So here we have different phases of cell cycle. Of course, this is not correct for each cell type. This is just kind of general outline how that can happen. So let's say, for example, dark gray means these are dark gray, so these are overexpressed. And light gray means these are, you can say, loss of expression. So here in this case, if you have overexpression of cyclin B1, you have a downregulation of in the family protein that will allow these cells to form these complexes, and that will phosphorylate RB protein and will lead to ultimately ETF activation, and cells will enter into cell cycle. That's basically, you can say, a G1 phase. Later, in other phases of cell cycle, you also have cyclin E upregulation. You have cyclin A upregulation. But at the same time, you have CYP and KIP protein, they are downregulated. So even though you may not have sufficient amount of these cyclins to form very active complexes, but because you don't have CYP and KIP, high level of these protein, ultimately, once cells cross the decision point, they will take over and they will promote cell cycle. Similarly, you have other phases of cell cycle. Again, you have cyclin A and cyclin B and different other protein that is important for spindle formation. They are also upregulated. So during lung tumorigenesis, depending upon, because this is not just one day process, it takes years to develop tumor. So during 20-30 years of tumorigenesis, various event can happen, and that can ultimately lead to lung tumorigenesis. So here again you have cyclin E upregulation, and then you have cyclin B CDK upregulation, and so even at the upregulation of, you can say, downregulation of spindle defect. So there are so many things that can actually regulate cell cycle, and that can lead to either apoptotic cell death. They can lead to also damage, and they can be repaired, and cells will halted until they need repair, and then they enter into cell cycle. So these events, they happen at multiple stages of tumorigenesis, and ultimately, if you have upregulation of more cyclin and CDK4 complexes that ultimately form active complexes, and that will lead to cells to into cells. So even within same tumor type, different cell type, they can have also different mechanism. So like for example, in this case, you have a small cell lung carcinoma and non-small cell lung carcinoma. So in this, so when you have this, it's not very clear, that means not defined. When it's completely dark, that means you have a high level of overexpression, and this one means you have a reduced expression. So once you have a high level of E2F1 and very low level of RB protein, that means you don't have sufficient level of RB protein to block E2F function. And if that happens, then it's very easy, even if you have some, even if your cells, these complexes are not very functional. So there will be two situations here. You have a cyclin D, CDK4-6 complexes, they are not much change. They are not upregulated. RB is highly downregulated. E2F is highly upregulated. And cyclin is upregulated. So in this case, you can say even you don't have high level of cyclin D1, and if cells cross this restriction point, will be taken over by cyclin E because you don't have RB. So even if you have a low level of cyclin, this can actually phosphorylate RB protein, and then cyclin E and CDK2 complexes, they can hyperphosphorylate RB, and ultimately cell will enter into cell cycle. But in this case, you have a high level of cyclin D1 and high level of cyclin E, but this is not very clear whether they are, this can be up and down, and this you have reduced. So here in this case again, once you have high level of cyclin D, you have a very low level of RB protein, and then RB protein will be phosphorylated, and ultimately whatever E2F you have, that will lead to basically force cells to enter into cell cycle. And then you also have a downregulation of a P20, CIP and KIP family protein. So each cell type within same tumor can have different mechanism to overcome the inhibitory effect of cell cycle and enter into continuous cell cycle proliferation. So in addition to protein, they also very, you can say, secondary messenger like reactive oxygen species, they also play important role in cell cycle progression. And most of the reactive oxygen species, they are synthesized in the mitochondrial complex, mitochondrial compartment. And mitochondria have multiple very complex structures that have outer membrane, inner membrane, intermembrane space, and also they have matrix. They also have their own DNA, so called mitochondrial DNA. And the synthesis of reactive oxygen species is a very complex process that requires electron transport chain, and ultimately you have oxygen. This leads to feedback formation, and that will ultimately lead to RAS production. So like for example, in this case, you have an electron transport chain, and then you have superoxide formation, and this ultimately will be dismutated by SOD, that's anti-oxygen enzyme, and that ultimately will lead to dismutation of reactive oxygen species. RAS can also be generated in the cytoplasmic compartment by NOX pathway. So once RAS is become high level of RAS, that can be dismutated by various antioxidant enzymes like catalase, glutathione peroxidase. So these proteins, they basically, you can say, quench these various reactive oxygen species and ultimately leads to detoxification of these reactive oxygen species. But these reactive oxygen species ultimately will lead to two kind of things. First, they are required for cell cycle proliferation. So low level of reactive oxygen species is important for cellular proliferation. But a high level of reactive oxygen species, they lead to various toxic consequences. For example, DNA damage, lipid peroxidation, protein oxidation, and that ultimately leads to cell death. So because reactive oxygen species, they are required for cellular proliferation, cancer cells harbor a high level of reactive oxygen species. So that means then, because they are continuous in proliferation, they have more reactive oxygen species as compared to normal cells. So this is a can be actually advantage to develop new therapy. So let's say, for example, here in this case, just this is just example, doesn't mean that we know what is the level. We don't know how much RAS you require for normal cell survival. We don't know. But let's say, for example, we have this much level of RAS production continuously you need for cell survival. Tumor cell, normal cells, you have little higher, so that cells will not die, because you need required signaling to continue to maintain cell structure and function. But tumor cells have high level of RAS production. So now if you induce RAS production, and there is a threshold that basically allow this RAS production to induce cell death. So if you can use this mechanism to induce level of RAS production to a certain, cross this threshold, you can actually induce cell death in tumor cell, but not in normal cells. So that is why a lot of these anti-cancer agents, they induce RAS production so that the cancer cells mostly will be more affected by these RAS production and toxic effect. But for the normal cells, they will not be have toxic effect. But the only problem we have, we don't know how much we need it. So that is problem that we are not able to get advantage of this RAS-based anti-cancer therapy. So I think that's all we have for today. So I think, yes?
So the ROS, the increased ROS that are produced in the tumor cells, is that because of metabolism, or is it some kind of regulated?
Okay, so that's a very good question. We don't know exactly how this happened, but one of the mechanism I will suggest that basically, because you know most of the tumor cells, they have defective mitochondria. And when you have defective mitochondria, so remember, your oxygen, like electron transport is required five complexes, right? So if some complex is defective, that will allow the electron to enter into kind of produce reactive oxygen species. So let's say if there's a defect in complex one, defect in complex 3, that will lead to high level of RAS production. So because they have dysfunctional mitochondria, that also leads to high level of RAS. So, but exact mechanism how this happened is not known. Another example is that they have reduced level of antioxidant system. They have dysfunctional superoxide dismutase, or catalase. So once you have reduced antioxidant system and you have a dysfunctional mitochondria, so combination of these basically ultimately leads to high level of RAS production. Yes?
If you induce ROS, won't that push also the non-tumor cells to start becoming tumor cells?
Very good point, yeah. So this is also one of the drawback of cancer therapy. Because we don't know how much RAS we need that will not damage cells, normal cells. So once you have RAS production because of these anti-cancer agent or radiation therapy, that will induce RAS production, and these RAS then target DNA molecule and then leads to genomic instability. So that is why a lot of people who have been treated with a, let's say, early age of some kind of tumor, they develop secondary tumor after 10, 15, 20 years down the line, because they have developed new kind of tumor, that not because of the original tumor but because of therapy. All right, any other question? Yes?
Just a clarification for vocabulary is, when you talk about the cyclin expression during cell cycle, is nuclear D1 the same thing as cyclin D1?
Yes, yes, okay. Yes, right. So yeah. So what happens is basically you have different isoforms, but cyclin D1 is more important, but D2 and D3, they also play important role. Yeah. Okay, all the best for you guys, and hope you will do good. Yeah.